Hello and welcome to the Many Rules of Film Club. This is Jeff Yance. I am the program director at the Loft Cinema in Tucson, and I'm joined today by Heather Lattis, occasional filmmaker.
Hello.
And Rusty Boulay Stevenson, multimedia artist.
There is no Rusty, only Zool.
Thank you, Rusty. Sure. Today, we're excited to be talking about someone that I think we all agree is one of our finest American actresses, Sigourney Weaver. And I think we all agree that maybe she doesn't get enough credit as she deserves.
Well, she's never won an Academy Award.
She's not, which is very surprising.
She's been nominated a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Twice for supporting actor, supporting actress, and once for lead.
Mm-hmm.
For Gorillas in the Mist.
Yes. And Working Girl. Nominated for an Oscar for
that's
that.
That's right.
And nominated for an Oscar for, I think, one of my favorite movies of the 80s, for sure, Aliens. So I was going to talk a little bit about the Alien quadrilogy, quartet, whatever you want to call it, the four Alien films, which I think are the defining Sigourney Weaver roles as Lieutenant Ellen Ripley. Alien from 1979 was really the first Sigourney Weaver role. She had a tiny role, I believe, in Annie Hall.
Yeah.
But she really kind of exploded in Alien in 79. Well, explode is probably not a great word to use when talking about Alien. But she broke.
Emerged.
She emerged as an actress on a major scale with Alien. So I think as a lot of people who know the Alien legend know, the roles in Alien, the characters were written by the screenwriter Dan O'Bannon as gender non-specific, i.e., in Hollywood terms, all male, I would say. Sigourney Weaver was not originally cast as Ripley. The original actress to play that role was going to be Veronica Cartwright, who was also in Alien as Lambert, the navigation person in the film. And Meryl Streep, strangely, was the producer's choice to play Ripley.
Yeah.
Amazing actress. I don't want to take away from Meryl Streep, but I think she would have been terrible in Alien. I think
Agreed.
She was not the right fit for that.
No.
So here's Sigourney Weaver. She's young. She's, I think, 29 or 30. She's playing with all these very seasoned actors like Harry Dean Stanton and John Hurt and Tom Skerritt. And she kills it. She kills it as Ripley. Starts out as a kind of a almost a minor character. And then she emerges throughout the film as the hero or heroine, as the case may be, defeating the alien, supposedly. Mostly.
Kinda.
Yeah, kind of. And then returning in three sequels, I think probably the best, most people agree, Aliens.
Yes.
From 1986, where she has really emerged as a bona fide action hero at that point. So watching how Sigourney Weaver changed as the character of Ripley changed in those 7 years in between, it's pretty amazing because she is now an A-list Hollywood actress. Ripley is now, I think people refer to her as the female Rambo, a fembo at the time, which I think it's not giving her the credit due.
No,
really isn't.
It's just using an 80s reference, which was popular at the time.
She has more range than that.
She has more range than that. She becomes a maternal figure. She becomes a warrior. She leads the military to defeating these aliens. And then as the series goes on in Alien 3 and Alien Resurrection, she goes through a lot of changes, even becoming non-human by the end. Not to spoil anything, she's an alien-human hybrid
at some
point.
We don't know how it happens.
No, somehow it happens. But the complexity of this role of Ellen Ripley, I think, is almost unprecedented in American cinema in terms of the arc of this character.
Yeah.
Of a woman over the course of 20 years, four films. So what do you guys think about Sigourney Weaver as Ellen Ripley?
Well, gosh, there's so much to talk about with her. With the Alien film, it's a gorgeous movie. Like, every shot in it is really beautiful, beautifully done. I don't know where the quote comes from, but I'll talk about it here real briefly, though, is that every shot, every frame of a movie should encapsulate the entire movie in one shot. And I really think that Alien, Ridley Scott, right? He really makes every single shot matter in that movie, and it's all really helping to tell the story. Her role in Aliens is really neat. I think that there's kind of a subtext of she's a female action adventure star by the time she's in this movie. She makes a ton of money in it. And the subtext is almost her like leading this young girl who represents the future of women actors as action heroes. That she's going to, here I am, I'm the pioneer. I'm the one leading the way and awing all the men by being in the big mechanical suit, by being such a tough person, you know,
yep.
And I'm going to lead you, young person. I'm going to show you the way to be more female action adventure heroes, which I think that's really fascinating, too.
Yeah. And she becomes a literal mother figure in the film.
Yeah.
Which Rambo never did, I should point out.
No.
More so, range.
More range. It was a more complicated character.
Well, she comes against the military guys when they arrive. You know, they won't listen to her. They won't tell her, even though she's there
right.
for her experience
right.
On the first journey.
Yeah.
They will not listen to her when she tries to tell them what to do, what's best to do. So there's that struggle, you know, the typical struggle of assertive female in that kind of role, and she kicks butt in that,
yeah.
you know.
And it's more explicitly feminist, I think.
Right.
I think by the time of Aliens, the sequel, they had thought of her as a feminist character.
Yeah.
Whereas in the first film,
right.
It's not, she's not necessarily a feminist heroine, I don't think. She's just the character who is called into action to defeat the monster. And, you know, the end of Alien, she is stripped down to her underwear, which is a very kind of typical horror film.
Yeah.
It is.
To put a woman in. But she's also very vulnerable, which I think was the point of that she's vulnerable. She's in space. She's in her underwear. The alien is going to attack her. So it was really more about just like removing her armor in a way.
Oh, it certainly does.
Yeah.
And the camera is so intimate in some of those,
yeah.
with some of those shots. I mean, it really is interesting that she's gone the whole movie and hasn't been sexualized for the most part. And then we get to the end there. And I mean, that's all you can think about.
It's up there. Yeah.
There and it's,
yeah.
it's just, her
yes.
sexuality
yes.
is completely on display.
Yes.
I would not feel comfortable with a camera showing me like that, personally, that's really a brave thing to do. But
yep.
it's interesting because it does really sexualize her at the end.
It does. And it falls into a little bit of a horror cliche, this
yeah.
scantily clad woman being terrorized by the monster. But because I think it's Sigourney Weaver and she projects such strength and intelligence, and I think we talked a little bit before off mic about her imperious quality that she has. She feels very regal.
Yes, she has presence.
She has a real presence. And you don't really feel like, even though she's in her underwear at the end of Alien, that she's being necessarily exploited as a weak character.
No.
She still has the power.
She does still have the power, even though the editing cuts her up as a very, I mean, it puts her sexuality on display. You almost feel like she's still in control of that.
Right.
For whatever reason. I really do. I don't think that it undercuts her performance at all.
No.
It adds just a different layer by the time you get to that point.
Yeah. And by Alien, she had completely embraced this kind of warrior aesthetic. I mean, she's not sexualized at all in Aliens.
No, in Alien, she's not at all.
No. Culminating in, I think, one of the greatest final battles of any movie, where she's fighting the alien mother queen, and she gets to deliver the amazing line, "Get away from her, you bitch." And I remember when I saw that in the theater exploded. They went berserk because that line was so great and empowering for men and women. And you saw these two mother figures battling it out for this little girl. Really an incredible moment in cinema, I think. And no one could have played it like her.
No, that's very true.
Yeah.
No one could have played it like her. And we also talked about this just a touch, but if they had, it was gender nonspecific. The role when it was written for Alien, they could have cast a man in it if they do that, it does not become the Hallmark franchise that it is.
True.
No.
It really doesn't. I don't think they make four of them.
No.
No, it would be a typical action horror series.
Yeah, it would have been one, maybe two parts, and that's it.
Right.
And it wouldn't have been memorable as it is now.
Yeah, and part three, which a lot of people discount, but I think is actually a pretty interesting film directed by David Fincher, it becomes a pro-choice parable with her and perhaps an alien gestating inside of her, which you could not have done. It could not have been a pro-choice parable with a man in that role.
Really interesting. I just looked it up because I was so it's something that we've talked about before, is how hard it is for females to get work, keep work, to have a female action hero. Aliens was made on a budget of $18.5 million. Do you guys know how much it made that summer? In 1986, it made $85 million.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal. Yeah. That's a huge deal. And obviously, they made episode 3 and episode 4, and she got other really great roles and continues to get roles now.
Yeah.
Well into her 60s. But there haven't been... it's interesting that the Ghostbusters with the female cast isn't making money this summer, and so they're saying no sequel. But... because it was a chance we took and now it's not working. But here's a chance they took with Aliens. They make this amazing female action hero. It makes gobs and gods of money, and there's no follow-up really with it. There aren't too many more action movies with female heroines like that.
No.
Who are so strong and now we see it finally with Star Wars, the last Star Wars, we see a female character who isn't sexualized,
right,
who does carry a lot of the film. But it's taken a long time to get there again.
Well, and we still have a ways to go. There's still, I mean, the fact that we have to have a conversation that about whether a female superhero can hold her own movie is ridiculous. We're still having that conversation in 2016 is
in
like,
the wake of the Ripley character, which everyone said was going to change the industry. Because here's a woman character that's making money at the box office. Men like her, women like her.
Yeah. Well, I think, if you go back, they were saying that at one point, her, Schwarzenegger, and maybe Bruce Willis were the top three that could pull the box office for like a summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
I mean, that's incredible for a woman at that day and age. And I think that could happen again. I think movie studios just have to have faith. They have to find a good story and have faith. And I think it will happen. They just underestimate people.
Right. And I think it's also a testament to what a great movie Aliens is.
Yes.
I think that was the key, that it was such a great film that everyone loved it and they could get behind it and therefore support a female character.
Yeah. It's such a great suspense. It holds its own. I mean, 30 years later, it's still good.
Oh, both Alien and Aliens are excellent, excellent films. I watched Alien for the very first time just a few days ago, and wow, it's an incredible film.
Yeah.
It really is. And I think... James Cameron is the director of Aliens, the second film.
Right.
I think he knew he was doing something special. Mm-hmm. I think he knew he had a special script. I think he knew he had a special actor in Sigourney Weaver. And I think he knew he was breaking new ground.
Yeah. Well,
it feels like it throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you will about James Cameron, but he does a thing with powerful female characters that... in a lot of his movies. So
yeah, the Terminator of course, is a big,
you know, even though I don't like Avatar, there is a strong female lead in that. I give him props for that.
Yeah. And then she became a producer on the third and fourth Alien film. So I think she sort of started taking control of the character in a way, which is kind of great. And she used that clout in the 80s from Aliens to parlay that into some other film roles that were not sci-fi, although I think that's going to be her legacy, I think, is the Alien films.
Sci-fi queen,
but she has made a lot of amazing films. One of them, Heather, we were talking about Sigourney Weaver being funny. And I think we all think she's very funny, but not often given a chance to be funny in film.
Yeah.
But one film that is very funny is Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest. And I watch Galaxy Quest and I watch Working Girl. And Galaxy Quest is hilarious. I think it will forever be hilarious, especially if I'm a Star Trek Next Generation person.
Oh, me too.
So, I mean, it's doubly hilarious because of that. But yeah, she's, you know, she plays the woman character in any sci-fi TV show and Galaxy Quest. And, you know, she like, I think this is a good example. She does it well, but it's a good example of them not giving her. She plays the straight player. She doesn't play the comic relief. She's there. She does, but it's like, you know, she says, I have one job on this ship, and it's to say that with the repeat what the computer says, and I'm going to do it. I mean, and that's funny, but she's playing it, you know,
yeah,
like straightforward. And
right.
She does it so well. I mean, I think it's kind of like a double funny because, you know, here's this woman who plays Ripley, then now she's going to play Galaxy Quest, a woman who is on this old TV show who plays the woman character in a very cheesy, busting out of her uniform, blonde, you know, she is not often blonde in her characters.
No.
And, you know, she's got the romantic undertones with the captain of the ship.
Right.
And, I mean, she does it so well. I mean, I believe it, but it's so unlike Ripley and her other characters.
Because she should be actually commanding that starship, not Tim Allen.
Yeah. She would be the one.
That's what you're thinking.
Yes. So it's good. I mean, Galaxy Quest is great. And she does well in that part. I would have been interested to see her having some more comedic stuff. But she does it well. She has this presence. A lot of her roles are... you know, like Working Girl, she plays a strong professional woman. Mm-hmm. Granted, she ends up being the bad guy. But, you know, it's same kind of ideal. You know, and a girl is in the mist. She's a scientist. So characters that have a status to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's been a few roles. She played this one role, Snowcake, I think, where she played a woman who had some developmental disabilities, which she was really good in that, but it was weird seeing her in that kind of position. But yeah, I think Galaxy Quest is one for the ages. It'll be always, you know.
It's the really good Star Trek movie. You
know. It's the good, exactly, right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I give it a pass a little bit because it's satire.
Right.
So it's satirizing the fact that there's only one woman.
The sexism.
Right. The fact that you end up always seeing her cleavage by the end.
Right.
And like, it's totally satirizing that, and it's tongue in cheek. And so I give it a pass for a lot of, and her line about that, I've got one thing that I do. that's how it is. I'm the one woman in this movie.
Yeah.
I have one thing that I do as a woman in a movie, in a Hollywood film, and I'm going to do it.
Do it over and over and over. I'm going to do it well.
Yeah.
Right.
Do it really well.
Yeah. But I think that indicates that she does have maybe more range than the Sci-Fi Queen title would indicate.
She totally has range, yeah.
We talked about some other films like Ice Storm, where she plays the 70s suburban mother. Yeah.
It's a really underrated film.
Really underrated film. Great performance.
Because of James Cameron. Because Titanic came out that year, I think. Ice Storm didn't get as much.
I don't know. I blame Titanic
for Ice Storm.
I mean, Ice Storm was like an indie. I mean, it was an indie when it came out.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was.
Right, it wasn't a major studio film.
It wasn't, but it was great. I mean, everybody that I knew, it was like, I saw Ice Storm. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was good.
Yeah, it was the thinky movie from that year.
Yeah.
One of the better thoughtful films. I also watched The Year of Living Dangerously to get ready for this podcast. And that's Mel Gibson's in that, a really young Mel Gibson. And that's one of Sigourney Weaver's first really big roles after Alien. That's her big role. And you know, The Year of Living Dangerously, it couldn't be made today. It's from 1982, and it's got a kind of a vibe of The Killing Fields. It's about a reporter. Really fascinating, very thoughtful film, you know, that I recommend without reservations at all. It's really, if you're in the mood to think about things and in the mood to think about how journalism works, that's what it's about. And Mel Gibson's really good in it. Sigourney Weaver's really great in it.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's Peter Weir. It's an Australian film. So it's really,
that's right.
It's got a lot of pedigree behind it. And Linda Hunt, my love Linda Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
Who won an Oscar that year for portraying a man in the film.
Yeah.
It's an incredible film.
Really is. Death and the Maiden, I haven't seen, but I've heard such amazing things about.
The Polanski movie. That's great.
Disturbing and amazing.
Yes. So I think this is also maybe an opportunity to talk about, I think with perhaps her other film that most people know her from is Ghostbusters.
Sure.
Yes, as Dana Barrett.
As Dana Barrett, the love interest of Bill Murray's character, Dr. Yes. Peter Venkman.
Yeah.
She's really, she helps to make that movie. Just so great. She plays it really straight, but a lot of like her line about Zool, she has some comedic moments. And again, we talk about her presence. Her presence is really interesting in this film. She lives alone. She's really not interested in dating by and large. The one conversation we hear with her mother, she says, oh, I've got a date. Like, look, I'm not the spinstress. I'm not the person that's mom. I really do have a life outside of just working for the symphony, but she works in the symphony, right? She's a musician. And so she's a very strong female character for the most part in a movie that doesn't have many female characters, I would point out.
Right.
Yes, for sure.
And she's interested in Bill Murray. So how serious can she really be?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she's sort of interested in Bill Murray, and then he just kind of pushes himself on her.
Right.
He grows on you, kind of like mold.
Yes.
Yeah. But I think Ghostbusters did play up the glamour side of Sigourney Weaver, which she didn't often do in films, because she is very attractive in the film.
And she's tall. She's 6 feet tall. Anytime you see her, she's as tall as any of the men she works with, which is always interesting. You don't see that with most women in film.
Right. Which makes her a difficult damsel in distress because she is so imposing looking.
Yeah, that's why her role in Working Girl works so well. Yeah. Why she can be this really powerful female. Working Girl, too, if you haven't seen it, is really worth checking out. We've talked about it now a couple times on our podcast. There are some great, great roles and some amazing hair.
Yeah.
hair.
Walls of hair. Crispy hair.
She's also in Dave. She's the president's wife. She's the first lady in Dave and plays a really nice role in that as Ellen.
Well, I don't know. She plays one of the best movie first ladies, like believable in my opinion to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, again, because she's so regal.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
She's got like almost this nobility.
There's an intelligence there. Even when she's playing in a dumb comedy, you still feel like she's very smart.
Well, and she went to Yale.
Right.
I think you have to be smart to go there from what I hear. Sometimes. We've had some presidents maybe who went to Yale, maybe who didn't quite fit the smart category. Yeah. But at any rate, I digress. But she graduated from Yale School of Drama. And that's really prestigious. That's where Meryl Streep went. Mm-hmm. There have been a ton of really great actors who've gone through there. And so she's obviously very smart. And that's where that nobility and the regalness comes out.
Yeah, the poise. And speaking of Meryl Streep, I mean, we talked about her being the original choice for Ripley in Alien. And my theory has always been, I always think that Sigourney Weaver is as good an actress as Meryl Streep.
Agreed.
I think. But I think her association with genre has hurt her in the eyes of the industry in terms of prestige, in terms of getting those kind of prestige Meryl Streep roles.
Yeah, well, I think it's so funny. Whenever you talk about sci-fi, I'm a huge sci-fi fan, but some people still, to this day, look down upon it like it's a lesser genre.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where she fell into, for some reason, because it's sci-fi, you know, you're not as, which to me, sometimes it's even harder to act in those roles because you have to be more fantastic, more magical, more, you know, thinking beyond this life to be believable.
Yeah.
And I think she probably did pay for that attitude of like sci-fi being less.
Sci-fi and comedy. Comedy is not taken seriously either.
Right.
Even though in my mind, comedy is much harder to do than drama. I find comedy, I mean, comedians lose their timing. They don't have it for long, right? Chevy Chase lost it. Eddie Murphy lost it.
Yeah.
Like, it's not something that you have all your life. It takes a really special...
There's a window.
Yeah, there's a window typically for people who can do comedic acting. And yet Sigourney Weaver, still has it. Because there's a Saturday Night Live skit where she's kind of poking fun at herself. She's addicted to looking at what people are saying about her online. Right. It's hilarious. It's a hilarious skit. And she does it so well. I mean, it's so believable, and she's probably 62 when she did that. And it's just really good. It's really well done. Her comedic timing is great. Her delivery is great. And I really admire her for her ability to work in sci-fi and in comedy, and to carve out a niche like that for herself. Her role in Gorillas in the Mist As Diane Fossey is her real Meryl Streep kind of role.
Exactly.
Yeah. Where it's heartbreaking and it's all drama and it's really intense and it's a beautiful movie and a great film. But that's her one moment where she got the chance to be in a role like that.
Yep.
That was super dramatic. Otherwise, she has been somewhat limited because she's limited to comedies and sci-fi. Mm-hmm. I like the movie Holes for Children. It's not called Holes for Children.
No, Holes, a film for children. Yes.
A children's movie.
I want to see that movie.
I really like the movie Holes because it's a really interesting film. It starts out and you almost think it's a dystopian science fiction movie, which is why I imagine she was maybe cast in it.
Right.
And then as the movie goes along, it changes. Your view of it changes. It really kind of brilliant because one of the things about film that I really like a lot of times is that it doesn't tell you everything that's happening right away. It throws you in. Films that I like, they kind of throw you in and just assume that you're going to sit through it long enough to figure out what's happening. Mm. And Holes does that kind of really well for a children's movie. I think so. they throw you in and you don't quite understand why is it that they're going to send him to a camp because he did something kind of wrong, maybe even though he didn't do it. And it just is so strange that parents would give up their kids. And you're like, what kind of world is this? And then as it goes on and on, you realize, oh, this is just modern day and things are kind of corrupt. And she's a bad guy in it. She's the principal villain.
Right.
And she really plays it very well.
She's a working actress. She does, you know, she's continued to work no matter what, it seems.
And she has a lot of voice work. She was in WALL-E and Finding Dory.
As soon as you hear her voice at the sea park, I know it's her.
Yeah.
She is one of the best soothing but, like, regal again voices that is out there. She does, you know, the voice for some video games. She's, mm-hmm. yeah. She's one of those actors that didn't just drop off the face of the earth once her upswing ran out, and she's working. And I think that's admirable. And despite the fact that Hollywood doesn't favor older actresses, I mean, she still has been underutilized. She could do many, many more roles and do so well in them. But
men in their 60s get all kind of leading roles.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. I think if Hollywood were truly brave, the new Ghostbusters with an all-female cast was great. But what about casting Sigourney Weaver as a Ghostbuster?
I would have loved that.
I mean, she could still do it. She's funny and totally she's strong and she looks great. And
I wanted her to have a bigger part, but
Holly was not that brave.
No, not that brave.
I think. But good for Sigourney Weaver. I just think that as a sci-fi icon, if you want to ensure a long and rabid fan base, you get into genre.
Yeah.
It's true.
Because longer than a quote-unquote normal career outside of genre, you're going to have fans forever.
Yeah, that's true. I haven't had, I've read many interviews, but I would bet she gets a lot of that.
Oh, yes.
She has to. The Alien franchise alone has so many fans, and they're so, I mean, they're rabid fans, right? The Alien fans, they know those movies inside and out, and I'm sure if she wanted to go to the comic cons around the country, she'd be getting.
Yeah.
And there's a fifth installment on the horizon, supposedly, starring Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, she's somehow involved. I don't know how, but.
Yeah. She said she would only do it if the script appealed to her, and apparently.
Finally.
There's something cooking.
Okay.
So I think we're wrapping up here.
Yeah.
Heather and Rusty. The many, many Sigourney Weaver films to watch. So we should get out there.
There are plenty that we did not talk about.
Yes.
Oh, there really are. She's been in so much great stuff, and she's really a great actor. I really loved watching films with her in it this time around.
Yeah. And that's one thing I love about this podcast is that we can talk about actors and actresses who are maybe not high on the radar at the moment, but are so worthy of attention.
Definitely. Yeah.
And I think she's one of them.
Well, she definitely is. It's kind of sad that she's only gotten the little handful of Academy Award nominations that she's gotten. She hasn't won an Academy Award because she's one of the preeminent actors, female actors of our time and our generation, I think.
All right. The campaign starts here. Sigourney Weaver gets an Oscar.
She's a role.
Give her an honorary Oscar, a career Oscar. Okay. Thank you, Rusty and Heather.
Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, well, next week we're going to be going off in a totally different direction, and we're going to be looking at the films of John Waters, which I can't wait for. Huge John Waters fan. Which brings me to rule number 410 of the Many Rules of Film Club, which is trash is trash. There's good trash and there's bad trash. And some people can do it better than others. And we'll see how John Waters stacks up. King of trash. That's what I'm going to call him. Thanks for listening to the Mini Rules of Film Club. Check us out on the minirulesoffilmclub.com. You can check us out on iTunes. You can subscribe there and rate us there as well. All right. So we'll see you next time on the Mini Rules of Film Club. Thanks for listening.